Welcome to We Make Children's Books, the podcast that takes you through the imaginative minds of children's book authors and artists. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and in today's episode, we are excited to have with us the acclaimed Vermont children's book author and graphic designer, Mark Gagne.
And so Mark is hails from, you live in Vermont now, correct?
I live in Vermont.
Right. Yes. And were you from Vermont originally?
I grew up right across the lake in Plattsburgh.
Okay. So all right.
I didn't go very far, but
yeah, just
always
just
in the Northeast.
Oh, always in the same general geographic.
I'm the last Northeast holdout too. All the relatives and family have gone south.
Oh, okay. All right. to warmer pastures.
Yes. Huh?
When I first went, it was to the 2016 Vermont Comic Book Convention, and they had a table of just people's, you know, little giveaway swag and stuff, right, of like little business cards and stuff. And I remember my eyes drew straight to your style artwork. It was your cryptozoology.
Okay.
Yeah, ABCs, yeah, of the cryptozoology. Yeah. Thing and your style itself is fantastic. It's unique and nostalgic at the same time, if that makes any sense.
It's very, I feel like the term minimalistic has been overused a lot, but it is, I really like I try to pare everything down into the least amount of information,
right,
that I need in order to convey whatever concept I'm trying to do. And I like that aesthetic, but also it's faster.
You've been doing this. So before we start talking more about your work, let's just dive right in and kind of give everybody the history, how you started into doing graphic design and children's books.
Well, I mean, I've always drawn. Like my parents have this story of getting contacted by my kindergarten school teacher because what I was doing was copying cartoons out of the Sunday paper, bringing them into class and selling them to the other kids. So they had to tell my parents, like, yeah, you can't be selling stuff in school. So that was the first, that was my first, you know, 6 years old. I was like, this is a good gig. Then, you know, you go through high school and college, and I took some typical art classes like painting and printmaking and all kinds of other things and illustration. And then I decided that I really wanted to zero in on comics. So I applied to the Joe Kubert School in New Jersey. And that was, at the time, that was the only comic book school that you could go to. I know Vermont actually has their own now. The School of Cartooning, what is it called?
Center for Cartoon
Center
Studies.
For, yeah. And so I graduated from the Kubert School in 95. My very first job out of college was a graphic artist for Heavy Metal Magazine, which was kind of like right in Manhattan, which was like a dream come true, you know?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Totally in over my head, like way in over my head. So that lasted about 8 months. And I was like, okay, I'm up to speed. But now, you know, then the offices were moving and I didn't want to move out to Long Island. So then I came back to the Northeast, settled in Vermont, started being a graphic artist for Vermont Teddy Bear. And then I was there for 6 years. One of the things that about being a graphic artist in a larger company like that is you end up at a lot of meetings with marketers and copywriters and a lot of people that may not have a background in graphic design. So you'll have questions like, well, why is that blue? Or why is that font so much larger than this other font? Or why is there so much space around this other thing? And I feel like I got really good at explaining design very basically in a simple way for easy to understand. So I started putting all of those little tidbits together, and that ended up being my first kid's book, which was a book about design. Complicated doesn't make it good. Which has always been my my operating motto for design is simpler is better. Complicated doesn't make it good. So that's when I left 2005. I left Vermont Teddy Bear to just do kids books and graphic design. And even doing kids books was a bit of not a mistake, but that wasn't what I had planned to do. I had done the design book as just a design book. I was sending it to traditional publishers, but not kids publishers. And they were sending me back feedback like, well, we like it, but we don't do kids books. So then I was like, oh, okay. And then they would say things like, well, we also don't work with people that don't have an agent. I'm like, okay. So I went out and sent it to a few agents, and one company was kind enough to take it on. And the rest, as they say, is history. 8 books later.
So tell me a little bit about your, we talked earlier about your style. What would you say is your, where'd you get your inspiration from? Of what did you, when you said you were young and you were drawing, yeah. And what did, which, was there a specific artist or like comic strip or,
yep.
or something that you kind of were drawn towards and that kind of helped influence your style?
I specifically took this book out. there was and I knew the cartoon before I knew this book. There was a cartoon called The Dot and the Line. And it's this amazing, it's this great cartoon where it's just a relationship between a straight line and a little round red ball. And it's basically all about design. It's all about structure and line and size and proportion and, you know, curved lines versus straight lines. It was just, it's been since I saw it when I was, probably came out, you know, when I was 5. It's just been such a great basis for what I like. And it's very, very simplistic. It's really... like just, there's very little background. It's just these two characters in frame. So that's always really appealed to me. Shel Silverstein has always really appealed to me. His style is basically line art, you know, as simple as you can get. Saul Bass is probably my favorite graphic artist. And he only ever did one kid's book. He did a book, brought that out too. Is Henri Walks to Paris.
Oh, right.
And it's really cool because his whole deal is just that kind of super minimalist kind of hand done, you know, big areas of color, and so he's always been an inspiration too.
Wow. Yeah, you can definitely see that with your style of how that's
connected. Well, and I used to do, like when I was a kid, I would do cut paper art.
Okay.
And so when Illustrator came out, that was like right in my wheelhouse. I was like, oh yeah, I can totally, I already understand how to use this program.
So what? So what's?
I dove right into that.
Okay. Yeah. You just brought up Illustrator. What's your mode of design? You say, is it Photoshop? It's Illustrator? Is it all digital? Do you do anything by hand anymore?
You know, it's, boy, I gotta say, it's almost 95% digital now. Like it's really high percentage digital, and it's been that way for a good 10 years. I do a lot of thumbnailing by hand, but once I get to the point where I really want to start formatting pages, it's almost all digital. Yeah. But I'll sit there and thumbnail and brainstorm and any, you know, sit if I'm sitting in front of the TV as a distraction or something.
Right. So you're one of the people, a few people that I know there actually is that this is like your full-time, you are yep. full-time graphic yep. designer, children's book author. So what's your schedule like? And like, how do you break up the day?
Right.
How do you, like, quote unquote, you know, go to the office in that sense?
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I have a studio. This isn't the studio. This is the living room, but I do have a studio that holds all of my, And I do like, I do a lot of stuff. Like I have the Etsy shop and I do the freelance design. I do the kids books. I do posters. I do show, craft shows and comic cons and things like that. So I have a studio that holds all of that stuff. So I'll, you know, I'm a night owl, so I don't go to bed till 2 or 3, you know, and that could be, you know, and I could be working right up until then. So I probably don't start work until after 12 o'clock noon. I'll have lunch or breakfast and then I'll start working because I probably don't get up till 10, you know, I didn't go to bed till 2. but I'll do, you know, I'll get up, you know, get up in the morning, kind of get the day started. And then I start working about noon or 1 and I'll work. I'm a big believer, and I haven't always been, but now I'm a big believer in list. Like I have a list of everything that I want to accomplish that day and projects. And I almost never complete the whole list, but it's a great feeling when you can cross something off that. So I'll spend anywhere from 3 to 4 hours doing whatever projects I need to do. If it's a paying project, then that always takes precedent. But I also have a lot of personal projects that I know maybe I'll do a Kickstarter later or some ideas for a book that nobody's really asking about yet, but I still want to flesh out a little bit and send to an agent or something like that. So I'll do that till about 4. And then at 4 o'clock, I go do errands. Go to the post office, you know, go get food, go all that stuff. And then usually about 7 or 8, I'll start working again. And then at that point, 8 o'clock or so, I'll work till 1 or 2. If I have stuff to do. Sometimes I've gotten really good at riding the up and down of creativity. Like I can tell when it's not happening. You know what I mean? Like, right. I'm like, all right, this isn't, I'm just going to zone out in front of Netflix for today and pick it up again tomorrow, because tomorrow will be different.
And because you said you also have, you know, you have your website. So in those days when you just, those times when you're not very creative, is that when you kind of update your Etsy shop and,
right.
And, yeah. And do something?
Yeah. You'll update that, you know, stuff. Update your shop, update your website. I find the low motivational days are actually really good days to go back to projects that maybe you've set aside like 6 months ago. And this winter has been, that's almost what I've focused on this winter, is going back to projects that I've set aside. And I've already completed 2 posters that I just almost had given up on, and 2 story kids books not that I had given up on, but I just said, okay, it got to a certain point where you just kind of have to go, I'm out of ideas on this one. Right. You know, and you put it away and your subconscious keeps thinking on it and you go back. And I just finished up a poster yesterday that I had set aside with probably a third yet to finish. And, you know, you go back to it and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I don't even remember why I set this aside, because I know exactly right. What I need to do to finish it.
And so what do you use? So you said you use Adobe Illustrator. Mm-hmm. Do you use one of those Cintiqs, or do you use a mouse, or how do you?
I use the trackpad.
Really?
Like I'm literally like click, 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 click. Like I don't use a mouse. I don't use a pen brush or anything like that. And it's just because it's what I've used for the last, you know, 15 years. I've had a laptop for that long. I'm just really quick with it. Sometimes I'll get together with a few other artists and we'll, you know, have a work, get together to work and bounce ideas off of. And they'll have the same reaction. They'll be like, what are you doing? No, they have a lot easier ways to do that. Like, I like it.
And I know on your website, you mentioned that you specialize in the art of silent storytelling.
Yeah.
How do you define that? What do you mean? How would you define
that? Definition? For me, that's just wordless narratives. So it's, I do story posters, which I consider silent narratives, where it's almost long form comic strip, where you'll take anywhere from 48 to 108 panels, and you're almost storyboarding it instead of writing it out. So you're just taking the action and the sequence, and a little bit at a time, working out the story. And it's really interesting because I'm basically writing at the same time that I'm doing the artwork. So if I have like the first third of a story done and I know sort of where it's going, but I see that there's a lot of yellow and blue in one part of the story, I'm like, okay, you know, maybe I'm going to want to balance that out later on in the story as it gets lower on the page. And then it starts to inform where the story has to go because I know I'm going to want blue. So what do I have to do to have blue in the story later? And so as much as the story influences the art influences the story on those particular projects.
And you also talked about that, you also talked about that you had a publisher, mm-hmm. but you also self-publish. So I know a lot of people who are listening on this. Well, I mean, some people who are watching or listening saying, wow, he's got a publisher. That's amazing. I'm always looking for a publisher.
Yeah.
And then we also are starting to see these very fervent folks who swear by self-publishing because it's basically like going into business for yourself. How did you get a publisher? That would be mm-hmm. question number one. And then question number two will be, how do you decide what books you will self-publish and which books will you give to a publisher?
Right. The publisher thing, I don't want to say I lucked into, but I had done the first design book completely. Like it was 120 something pages done. I think it ended up being 140 something, but at my first draft was 120. And it was a complete thought. So that's what I was sending to publishers as my unagented author and artist. And they were coming back with, well, and this was before I had my first contract, let's say this was like 2002, 2003. So Facebook didn't exist, Twitter didn't exist, Instagram didn't exist, LinkedIn didn't exist, all of these networking sites weren't around. So I was physically mailing samples of everything to publishers. And they would come back and say, well, you should go get an agent. So I literally only sent three copies to three different agents. And the first two said no. And then the third one said, yeah, we'll give it a shot. And that's really, really, really lucky. Like that doesn't generally happen.
So do the books that have a publisher, can our listeners and viewers go to your website at markgagne.com and actually get those, or is your entire library available through click through to, or seeing them on Amazon, or how does that work?
Right now, anything that I do that's published through a let's call it a mainstream publisher, is available on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or any of the major outlets online. Some of those probably, since I've been doing it since 2005, all but probably the last few books are out of print, which doesn't mean they're unavailable. It just means you might have to buy a used one. The latest book I did, which was One Little Monster.
Yeah.
That just came out a year ago this past fall. So it's been out a little over a year. That's definitely still in print and still available. So that's on there.
We have that book.
Yeah.
I think about when we first got a copy from you, I think my little girl wanted me to read at least once a week.
Yeah. So. That's right. Well, and all my friends have kids and they've all grown up on all of my books. Like I have like a little group of adolescent graphic artists. They all know the lingo, you know?
The other question is when you have an idea or something,
how do I decide what's what?
Right.
Well, because I have the agent, I'm actually, it is contracted that she represents whatever I do for kids' books.
Okay.
So, but that's also all she represents, that company represents. So anything that's a coloring book or posters or postcards or anything that's not a book, I generally self-publish. I'm in the process right now of looking for an art agent also who would represent that kind of work for me.
Okay. So you're still pretty good with the idea of wanting to get an agent then.
Well, if at my right now, yes. If I was starting out, if I was 20 right now and just starting out and starting over, it would be really hard for me to say the way to go is to go get an agent.
Okay.
It's a lot of work to do it on your own.
Right.
It's a huge amount of work. Like I've cut back a lot on the number of conventions and things that I go to lately. But I was doing 10 to 14, you know, shows a year, and traveling all over the country to do them.
Right.
So it's a lot, and there's a lot more because Twitter exists and Facebook exists and all of these other avenues exist. I don't want to say it's easier to get your name out there or to get a following, but it is, I'm going to say easier because I don't have a better word for it, right. But there are more opportunities to find that following and right. to find that group of people that like what you do. But I just turned 50, so I want somebody else to do it. But just bring me the work. All I want to do is the creative stuff.
Right.
I don't want to do the tracking people down to get jobs and all that stuff.
And it's true as artists, as like, you know, yeah. children's book artists and graphic designers and illustrators and comic book artists and self-publishers, is that you really, it's a new world out there.
Yeah.
Where you really have to be your own promoter.
Very much so. And even when I was starting, even though I have an agent and publishers and things like that, it's still a lot up to me. When a new book comes out, unless it attracts some awards or attracts some really, really positive reviews, it's a lot of the promotion is still left up to the artist right. and author.
You also have a friend that you work with on a comic book series yep. as well.
And yeah. My friend Sam Gerdich, who is also on Facebook, and the company that we do together is called Strong Arm Labs. And we've done five or six comics through there. And we've since we started doing the comics, we've also started to do posters, and the posters are on my website. The comics will be on strongarmlabs.com is the website for both of us. It's really interesting because the reason I'm an artist and author is I like to do both of that. He's the only, very rarely do I work with another writer. And trying to try to do their vision of something because I have such a clear idea of what I want. Sometimes it's hard to set that aside to do what somebody else is thinking, but Sam and I work really well together. We've known each other for 30 years. So we met in college and we have a very similar, I don't want to say similar sense of storytelling, but similar interests. We're both, you know, very much into sci-fi and fantasy
and what is
and all that stuff.
So talk to me a little bit about the process behind the difference in processes between doing a children's book and doing a comic book.
I think for me, it's almost the length of story. A lot of my earlier kids' books were the nonfiction ones are 140 pages plus.
Wow.
a lot of my storybook kids books, generally those are 32 or less pages. So you actually, and you're 32 pages and you're probably only putting one picture, one illustration on a page or even a spread. So there's a lot less, I feel like there's a lot less space in a children's book, not for storytelling, because you can still get a lot of storytelling in there, but you're just trying to fill the space more with larger illustrations. And I feel like you, in a comic, you can get a lot more complicated in the storytelling for sure. And you can probably get more detailed with the illustration. And it's interesting that, like, the, in the children's book, you're seeing probably, you know, a page of text or a half page of text and then a illustration. And in a comic, and it's specifically the story posters that I kind of view as a poster all on one page, you're seeing a progression that you don't normally get in a kid's book. So you're seeing like the panel, and you're seeing, you're literally kind of visualizing a character jumping from one place to the other, or doing, punching somebody, or flying through something. And I think that really gives comics their own unique way of telling a story, which I really love.
So when it comes to that, how much of the psychology is it behind color,
right,
placement? How much of that actually is goes into the process as you make a children's book?
For me, I mean, for some people, probably a lot. But for me, I'm writing the books that I wanted when I was a kid. Like, I write the stories and I illustrate the stories that I find interesting. I've always said that I'm not really doing kids' books, even though they're getting published by children's book publishers. I'm trying to do books that if I saw on the shelf in a bookstore, I would stop and pick up, and I would buy and read and keep on a shelf. And I think that comes back around to my basic style, which is somewhat more sharp and minimalistic and artistic. Not that kids' books aren't artistic. There's amazing artists in kids' books, and way better artist than I am. But something about the more minimal color and the more minimal shapes attracts my attention as a fan. You know.
Do you have any feedback on what level of children, like what age is there a pretty good,
I would say, for
sweet spot?
Yeah, like the earlier books I've done, like the nonfiction design books, I would say probably like 6 to 12. And then the newer books I've done, which are more storybooks, The One Little Monster, The Spooky Box, those probably skew a little bit younger. So I would say like 4 to 8, depending on how much of a reader the kid is. And I don't really put, it's part of my minimalist and complicated doesn't make a good philosophy, is that I don't put a lot of text in the, even if it's only one illustration per page, with some text, my text is still probably fairly minimal.
Right.
So my agent likes to say that my books are good for kids that don't like to read. I'm like, all right, I'll take it.
Yeah. Well,
that's fine by me.
So we're getting towards the close to the end of the hour. I told you, man, it flies by.
It flies by.
Yeah. So you, a lot of your stuff that we've been talking about over these, you know, past hour or so, is a lot of that is really focused, a lot of educational focus on it as well. So, you know, with your, you know, your fact posters and your graphics and children's books. So what is part of that is like, is, do you do any like talks to schools, to any like educational aspects of what you do?
That's always interesting for me, because I have absolutely no set presentation of any kind.
Yeah.
So if it's a slightly older class, like fourth, fifth grade, that they could be really ready with questions, I'm all in on like the question and answer kind of meet and greet kind of a thing. And I've been saying for years that I really need to just sit down and create like a good 15 to 20 minute presentation on kids' books and design and things like that. It's on the list, you know. one of these days I'll get around to it, I guess. But yeah, I'm completely open to that kind of a thing. It just works better when the kids are bringing their questions to the event, kind of a thing.
Right.
Like so, I wouldn't go into a first grade class just to read some of the books that I've done.
Right.
Like I wouldn't be good at that.
Was that ever part of like your publishing contract of having to actually do book readings or book signings or any of that?
No, it wasn't ever. And that was just something that kind of they leave up to the creator, they leave up to the artist and writer. And, you know, obviously it's beneficial.
Right.
I've never found it to be hugely beneficial in the sense of sales. I mean, it's a lot of goodwill. And it is fun most of the time to do that kind of a thing. I have this vision of like all the kids going home and the parents going, "So what'd you do in school today?" And they would go, "I don't know. Some guy came in and talked about books, Mike something, I think." You know, like, gave it a shot.
But it's, looking at your website and looking at all the stuff that you do, there is a huge educational component to it. It's almost like you want to share knowledge, but in a different format.
I really, and this is where I'll geek out about design for a second. And I really like graphic design, and I love the idea of the relationship of one thing to another thing. And there's so much bad design in the world, like just awful graphic design in the world, that I hope that I can make it a little bit better. Like if somebody has and that's for graphic design, just the smallest bit of knowledge about design goes a huge way. That takes you 75% of the way. And then the rest of the way is just your own aesthetic preferences. But if you just know proportion and scale and color and, you know, choosing the correct font maybe, or not choosing too many different things at the same time, that's huge. And that goes a long way to making competent design.
What's some good references or resources that people can go to if they want to learn more about graphic design?
Right. I mean, online is always, you know, just if you punch in elements of graphic design, 1,000 websites will pop up, kind of a thing. I've always told people, find that thing that you like, find that book or artist that you like, and it's fine to copy them. I mean, don't rip them off, but get inspired by them. Like, you know, I love Saul Bass. I could be accused of ripping off Saul Bass because I do very similar things because he's been such an inspiration to my work. You only improve from doing. So do your own birthday invitations, do your own flyers for community garage sales, do your own posters for just the movies and TV that you love. And that's one of the projects that I do. I do my own poster for every movie I see in theaters every year. And I don't get paid for that. I don't do anything with it. It's just something that I do to further my skills and something, you know, I give myself a couple hours to do the best poster I can in that time. And that's just, you only improve by staying on top of your skill. Staying on top of your craft and doing it, you know, and then we'll bring this all the way around to my first design book. That happened because it was done. It happened because I finished it and I had something I could send to an agent and a publisher. Way too many people just don't they talk about it and they just never do it. Mm. And it really is that simple. It really is. It could be terrible, but if it's done, you're 90% ahead of everybody else. So right. You just have to finish.
I mean, so your advice to people who are watching or listening this is just do it.
Just get the program. Just find an artist. I mean, literally there's a million graphic artists online. Like, find that aesthetic that you like. Go on to Pinterest or go on to Instagram and keep that inspiration file handy. You know, that's what all these books are. Right. It's all people I admire, and yeah. You know, they'll take inspiration from them.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. I think this has been, oh, you're about to say something.
Wait, I also broke out a couple other things. Just one other thing. This is Henri Toulé, I think I'm sure I'm butchering his name, but yeah. This was a book that came out a couple of years ago called Press Here. And this is the one book where I'm like, damn, that should have been my idea. It's a brilliant book. It's not mine, but it's awesome. It's one of my, it's easily in my top five children's books of all time. Yeah.
Really? Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. Like you said, that style that you have, that minimalist, but beautifully, there's so much story told in circles and triangles. It's amazing to see that. So.
Yeah. I have this other idea for a blog where I take movie screens and just break it down into triangles, squares, and circles.
Okay.
And just taking out the cinema. Now, that's another thing on the list someday.
Yeah.
I have a very long list.
So what we can do, and next time you do a Kickstarter, we'll just get back on and we'll talk more about it. So,
absolutely. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mark. This has been a great hour of conversation. And I saw that we had a lot of people that were watching as we're going along.
Oh, great.
So, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks. Awesome.